You're listening to Vatican Radio.
The Catechism of the Catholic Church teaches that persons with homosexual tendencies must be accepted with respect, compassion, and sensitivity. Every sign of unjust discrimination in their regard should be avoided. These persons, the Catechism goes on to say, are called to fulfill God's will in their lives, and if they are Christians, to unite their difficulties to the sacrifice of the Lord's cross. Along with all Christians, people with homosexual tendencies are called to live chastely, each according to his condition and state of life. And by the support of disinterested friendship, by prayer and sacramental grace, gradually and resolutely to approach Christian perfection. The pontificate of Pope Francis has offered new impetus for ministry to people who have often felt unduly judged and excluded from the Christian community, particularly homosexuals. One organization that has been reaching out to people struggling with homosexual tendencies in their own lives and even living homosexual lifestyles is Courage, a ministry founded by Terence Cardinal Cook in 1980 in New York, which now has chapters in several U.S. cities and around the world. The current executive director of Courage, Father Philip Pachansky, told me, Chris Altieri, that Courage has been practicing what Pope Francis has called the Church's mission of merciful accompaniment since its founding.
The way I usually start the conversation is, well, tell me your story. The important thing to do, first of all, is to listen and then gently ask good questions, help them to understand the road that they're on, ask them if they're happy and if they're finding what they're looking for. And if there are places in their life where they're making compromises with the moral truth, where they're not finding the kind of intimacy and support that they're looking for, well, then that's an opportunity to say, well, there is a way that God has marked out for all of us. It's about understanding what our bodies mean and what sexuality is for and what kind of relationships the Lord is expecting us to pursue. I think that following that path is going to lead you to where you want to be, help you to find what it is you're looking for. And if that's something that you're willing to pursue, then I'm here to help.
Has Pope Francis called then for accompaniment and careful listening to people on the margins, on the existential peripheries? How have you received that?
Pope Francis, in his book, The Name of God is Mercy, he said, we should welcome people who experience same-sex attraction, welcome them to confession, teach them how to pray, show them the way that God has marked out and help them to follow it. So I think that's what the Church has always been about, that welcome and accompaniment along the path that God has marked out for us. You know, when we can invite people to a conversation about what their life is like and whether they're finding what they're searching for, then we can also tell them the rest of the story, so to speak, show them how following the plan of God for our lives is ultimately going to lead to our happiness and fulfillment.
Is the language that we use to talk about persons with homosexual tendencies something that gets in the way of the conversations that you have with people with those tendencies? I'm thinking of your use of people with same-sex attraction as an expression, or even the abbreviation SSA. Is there a solution to the problem of labeling, if I could put it that way?
Well, I think when I use the phrase a person who experiences same-sex attraction, that SSA, as you put it, is only part of what we're trying to accomplish by speaking in that way. I mean, the main thing is to put the person first. This is a lesson that we learned from the disabled community, that it's much more respectful and compassionate to speak of, for example, a person who has a hearing impairment rather than a deaf person or the deaf, right? So I think, first of all, it's a matter of putting the person first, because that's where our identity comes from and our dignity, that we're created as persons in the image and likeness of God, all of us called to relationship with God and called to holiness. The second part is we talk about experience, because different people experience attraction in different ways. I mean, some people have experienced it predominantly for most of their life. Other people less dramatically and maybe at different times in different ways. And so I would never presume to know what's going on in someone else's mind and heart and to speak for them about their own experience. So I think to say that we're talking about a person who experiences attractions to the people of the same sex, gives a lot of room for that experience to be very diverse and personal to each individual. And then, you know, as you mentioned, terms like gay or LGBT, you know, certainly more familiar, but for that reason, they also have the potential to take on political overtones, to allow people to make assumptions about how a person's living in terms of acting on their attractions, if they're in relationships, things like that. So some people, you know, have told us that those labels don't really apply to them, that they're striving to live a chaste life, that they experience these attractions, but they're choosing not to act on those attractions. And so, yeah, I would never, and I don't ever get into an argument with someone about what he or she wants to call himself or herself. You know, I try to be respectful of that, but I think speaking in general terms, the most respectful way to approach it is to talk about people who experience same-sex attractions and then let them speak from their own experience about what those attractions mean in each individual's life.
That speaks to the pastoral language that we use, the language that you use when you're in conversation with people and in discussing in a broad and general way the problems and the challenges associated with talking fairly and accurately about homosexuality and people with homosexual tendencies or same-sex attraction, as you say. But there is also a difficulty involved in the necessary, really, technical language of the catechism, let's say, where we hear of homosexual tendencies or inclinations as objectively disordered, and of homosexual acts as intrinsically disordered. Disorder is a word that is subject to some equivocation. I can imagine it creating, I know for a fact it does create issues. There's resistance to it. Can you speak to that?
Well, I think it's first of all, you're right. This is one of the parts of the church's teaching that is perhaps most difficult for people to understand. But for that reason, we need more explanation of it. We need to take time to help people understand it rather than just dropping it altogether. There are various things that the church describes as objectively or intrinsically disordered. Some of them also have to do with sexuality, like lust is a disordered seeking of sexual pleasure apart from its procreative and unitive purposes. Pornography, masturbation, the church describes as gravely and intrinsically disordered. But she also uses that term for other things like lying, calumny, which is ruining a person's reputation through gossip. She uses it to describe the whole kind of tension that exists between men and women after the fall, after the original sin. All of these things she talks about as being disordered in the sense that they're not part of God's plan for human lives and human flourishing. So, you know, one of the things that people accuse the church of is being discriminatory in her teaching when she says that homosexual acts are by their nature disordered, that they're not part of God's plan. But honestly, I would contend that using that term in a technical sense, in a catechetical sense, shows that our teaching is not discriminatory because, you know, we're referring back to the order of creation, which applies to every single human being in every time and place.
We're about a quarter century on from the Catechism of the Catholic Church's call for welcoming people with homosexual tendencies and people who are living the homosexual lifestyle with compassion and mercy. Respect, in a word, basic human decency and Christian charity. But people with homosexual tendencies, people struggling with same-sex attraction, haven't always felt welcomed by the church, and frankly, they haven't always been welcomed by the church. How are we doing? I ask that question because Courage has been at it for quite a while, for nearly 40 years now, more than 40 years if you go back to the time before the official foundation by Cardinal Cook in 1980.
Well, I think you know, first of all, it's important to say that the visibility that you're talking about really only applies to a certain portion of the population, especially the Catholic population that is living the same-sex attractions. And unfortunately, the people that we're serving through our courage groups, our encourage groups, people who have chosen to live a chaste life, to in most cases to live a chaste single life in the world, who have said you know that they're willing to make these sacrifices and to in many cases leave relationships behind, change the way that they're living, change the way that they think about themselves and you know where their consolation is coming from. That's frankly a part of the story that many people are not interested in hearing and which doesn't often receive a platform. You know, one of the big reasons that Courage was founded in 1980 by Cardinal Cook in New York was, you know, these men who were hearing the word of God and his call to live chastely, you know, coming back to church. They found that when they told their friends that they were coming back to church or that they were going to live chaste lives, that wasn't acceptable, that they were in many ways rejected. And so they weren't sure. They lost their old friends. They weren't sure where the church, you know, would be, whether there'd be a place for them. And so Courage in many ways is kind of that. We provide that welcome on behalf of the church to say, yes, you know, you are brothers and sisters of ours. You know, we're pursuing this path of holiness together. And so, you know, let's get to work. Let's start down that road. So we are always looking for opportunities for our members to tell their stories. More and more of our members are comfortable doing that in public. We've been invited to you know to share the testimony of our members at places, for example, like the World Meeting of Families, like the convocation that the U.S. bishops have coming up in a few weeks. One of our members has just written a very compelling memoir. His name's Dan Mattson, and he's got a book coming out from Ignatius this week called "Why I Don't Call Myself Gay," and he tells his story and reflects on the church's teaching, the kind of things that you and I have just been talking about, and what those teachings mean to him. Things like our film "Desire of the Everlasting Hills" and some of the other things that we've been able to get out there in social media. We're trying to give our members a platform to tell their story, because the contribution that they have to make both to the church and to society these days is personal witness that chastity is far from being oppressive, that in fact it sets a person free, that it's given them freedom and enthusiasm for living deep, authentic friendship, for living a deeper relationship with God, that they're happier as a result of having made this choice to live chaste lives. So I think that's the contribution that Courage has to make to the not just to the church, but to the world today, to share the personal witness, the personal lived experience of our members who have a lot to say about the power of grace to transform human hearts and human relationships.
One final question before I let you go. Your elevator pitch. Let's imagine the scenario. You're in the elevator with a bishop in whose diocese you know there is no Courage chapter. There's no real outreach of the kind that you do. What do you say to him when he looks at you and says, "Oh, what do you do, Father?"
Well, it's a privilege for me to be the director of the Courage Apostolate, which provides pastoral care to people who are striving to live chaste lives and who need support and encouragement to do that. You know, it's a wonderful thing for me. I get to be a spiritual father to people who are saying, you know, I know what God is asking me to do. I'm not sure that I can do it on my own. Here's my story. I trust you with it. And will you help me? And you know, if I had a chance to, you know, have a few minutes with that bishop, I would, first of all, make sure that he was aware, and I'm sure he already is, that there are people in his diocese, members of his flock, who need the support and assistance of him as their shepherd and of his priests who provide them with the sacraments and with that spiritual fatherhood. Hopefully we'd be able to establish a courage chapter there where a priest chaplain would be able to welcome people in the name of the church and gather them together to support and encourage one another, and also to provide some training and consultation with all the priests of his diocese and others in ministry, who are meeting people every day in their parishes and schools and institutions. You know, I often say, in the field hospital that Pope Francis talks about, courage is one of the hospital tents way behind the lines, and it's the people, the priests and deacons and lay people and religious in the parishes who are doing pastoral first aid and spiritual triage, and so the more that we can help the whole church to understand, this is why the church teaches the way it does. This is what is probably in the heart and mind of someone who is living with this experience. This is how we lead others to know themselves as God knows them and to follow God's plan. So that's what we're doing, and I think the need is great these days, probably more than ever. And it's a real privilege for me to be a part of that. I think any bishop who gives it a shot in his diocese will find not only that it's fruitful and successful, but if he's able to get involved personally, that it's very rewarding for him as well.
That was the executive director of the Courage Apostolate, Father Philip Bachansky, speaking with me, Chris Altieri.
You're listening to Vatican Radio.